Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll give you a reason to be bullish on New York, including when it comes to jobs, in just a minute. Just want to thank everybody for just a few seconds here who has already contributed on this day one of our spring membership drive, and remind you all that we hope everybody will come in and help support public radio, help keep not-for-profit independent radio alive and possible and thriving here in the New York City metro area. All our listeners in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, we know you appreciate that this show is here for you live and local every day. And we just talked about a political race in New Jersey. We're going to talk about the New York area economy right now. We cover the world, too. Please keep this possible at 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. It takes full participation to keep a public radio station viable in this hyper-corporate era in so much other media. Thank you very, very much for doing it here on day one of our spring membership drive. 1-888-376-WNYC. 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. Thanks again. Now, if you're bullish on the future of New York, one reason these days has got to be the growth in our technology sector, which now rivals Boston and in some ways even Silicon Valley for attracting jobs and investment and talent. So we'll talk about that and more now with Jenna Wortham, who writes the Bits blog for the New York Times. Hi, Jenna. Thanks for coming on WNYC.
Oh, my pleasure, Brian. Thanks for having me.
A study came out last week from the Center for an Urban Future concluding that New York is second now only to Silicon Valley as a hub for tech jobs and tech companies. That would mean we have passed Boston to become number two. You cover startups. Do you see this growth around you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think what we're seeing is that New York has become an incredibly viable hub for startups that are hoping to break into advertising and fashion and media, areas that New York has traditionally always had sort of a very strong foothold in. So
the report also said the number of venture capital deals in New York went up by 32% since 2007, while it went down by 10% nationwide. What makes New York attractive to technology companies?
Well, I think for young startups who are sort of looking into break into these areas that have traditionally been very comfortable in New York, so, you know, advertising and media and fashion, that historically haven't necessarily been so prevalent in the Bay Area. I mean, I think the young entrepreneurs are coming to New York to start companies in those areas, and VCs are getting really excited about it because traditionally those areas haven't quite yet been as disrupted or made over by technology. And so there's a tremendous amount of activity around that and interest in funding companies that are breaking into those areas.
Right. And I know people who say New York is a more exciting place than Silicon Valley to be a programmer or a web designer because Silicon Valley is only about itself. You know, technology firms interacting with other technology firms like a company town. In New York, what makes it so exciting is that your clients are from the other main industries here that need your work. Fashion, finance, advertising, journalism, theater, music, all that great New York content. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think if you're, you know, a young, ambitious CEO starting out, New York is a much more exciting city to live in. And in the Bay Area, it's very laser focused on, you know, just tech. It's a kind of a one industry town, whereas New York, as we know, is a very diverse and multi-layered city. So,
and Boston is a medical hub, so a lot of biotech jobs are there. But New York is no slouch in that department either. Are there certain kinds of startups or sectors that are particularly booming in New York?
Well, I think that a lot of mobile startups have found a really interesting footing here because New York is such a dense city and it is sort of, you know, a virtual petri dish or test bed, so you can kind of see what, you know, you put your app out there and then you sort of see people using it in a very dense urban setting. And so it gives you a really interesting advantage to kind of field test your application and get a real sense of what it's like when, you know, several hundred or several thousand people are using it all at once. Whereas in the Bay Area, it might be a bit harder to get that pickup beyond kind of the early adopter, you know, very tech savvy crowd.
Jenna Wortham, who covers technology and writes the Bits blog for the New York Times. I see you've been holding a reader vote on 10 technology companies that could become the next big thing. You wrote, imagine you're a venture capitalist. Which of these 10 would you invest in? And we can't go through all 10, but do you have some results of the vote that you could share with us?
Well, one of the companies that was a fan favorite that came out kind of ahead was Square, which is based in the Bay Area, actually. But it's a mobile payment company, so they hand out these dongles that you attach to an iPhone or an iPad, and then you can actually pay via credit card using that. So it turns a mobile device into a virtual cash register, in a sense. But they've been doing very well. They're on track to pass $5 billion in transactions this year. They're rivaling PayPal and a number of other established payment startups, and so a lot of our readers seem to think that they would be, you know, one of the companies to watch in the coming year. Absolutely.
Got another one?
Another one that got a bit of interest was a company called Uber, which hopes to disrupt the taxi cab industry. And it's a mobile application that you press a button, and then a car shows up, and then it takes you to your destination, and then you sort of don't have to do anything else. Your payment information is already in the application, and you just get out of the car. And so it sort of works as almost a private limo, or you have a personal driver for the day. And so
that sounds good. Good for New York. And those are so interesting. Give me one more.
Well, another company that caught readers' attention was a startup called Quora, which is a question and answer service. And the idea is that you log onto this service and you post a question and readers answer it. And there's a nice sort of lively back and forth exchange about kind of, you know, where the best restaurant to eat at would be or why one startup is getting a lot of attention versus another. It's very popular among the tech crowd. And so that's a service that many people are keeping an eye on because it's had a lot of engagement and a lot of activity. And I think everyone's pretty excited to see what happens next with that one.
This is Internet Week in New York City, a few days that the city is celebrating its growing technology sector officially. What does Internet Week actually mean?
So Internet Week is an initiative that's undertaken by the city and a couple other partners, and it's sort of a week-long event of different panels and talks and lectures and discussions sort of by a lot of the leaders in the technology area in New York, noted venture capitalists, entrepreneurs, journalists. I was on a panel yesterday, sort of talking about some of the big issues that people are thinking about in New York, sort of what are the next big industries, how do you get your company off the ground, I mean, things like that. It's sort of designed to bring the New York tech community sort of together and kind of help it, you know, solidify and sort of continue to grow.
We casually use the term Silicon Alley for New York's tech sector as if it's a physical neighborhood, and I guess it used to mean parts of Soho or Chelsea or the Flatiron. Is there a district where they tend to concentrate?
You know, I think it's spread out. I mean, I think you'll find a pretty dense cluster of startups that live and work in Union Square area as well as Chelsea and Flatiron and even Brooklyn or parts of Dumbo and Williamsburg. I mean, I think it's a pretty diverse, you know, it kind of touches all the different boroughs.
People are anticipating the Facebook IPO, probably later this week, watching who will buy pieces of Facebook. But you wrote an article this week about companies that Facebook buys giving hints to its future. What's a good example of that?
Well, Instagram was, you know, obviously the most attention-grabbing of that with the $1 billion price tag, and everyone got really excited because there were a lot of interesting implications about what it might mean for Facebook's photo sharing features down the line or what they were thinking about in terms of mobile. And then after Instagram, they also bought two smaller companies that didn't quite make as big of a wave. It happened days after the Instagram sale, actually. But one was called Glancy, and it's a social discovery app that lets you sort of see how you might know people near you. So if you're using the application, it might pop up and say, you know, Jenna, you're near Brian, you have two friends in common, you might want to meet each other. And so there's some really interesting implications there in terms of how Facebook's thinking about how it will continue to grow as a service, because at this point, I think most people have friended everyone they're going to friend. I mean, you occasionally meet new people and you add them on Facebook, but we found all of our high school classmates, we found all of our college roommates, all of our old flames and, you know, old neighbors. And so now there's a sense that in order for the service to keep growing, people need to find and meet new friends. So an application like Glancy might help enable that.
Technology writer Jenna Wortham writes the Bits blog for the New York Times. And before you go, let me ask you about one other dynamic that you've been writing about. And I think this is really interesting. Private versus public sharing online. And it involves the way you used to use Instagram with your friends but can't anymore. What's happening?
Well, my usage of Instagram has pretty much stayed the same, but I think a lot of users are concerned that, you know, now that Facebook you know, has acquired the company and owns it, there are some really interesting implications about, you know, what might happen to the photos that people have previously uploaded to the service or will upload in the future. And so there was a sense that it was a much smaller company. It felt like a much private, even though everything you post is largely public. People felt that it was different from Facebook and a bit shielded and just a little less visible and a little less public than what they were used to on a site like Facebook. And so I think people are starting to get concerned, you know, is there a safe haven? Do I have a private space where I can share these images and sort of what happens next? And it's still very much up in the air. We don't know what will happen yet.
And you wrote a piece contrasting how Beyonce and Rihanna use social media. And it's not just the celebrity watching piece. It was really interesting about what the difference in the way they use it means about how regular non-celebrities interact. Tell us about that.
Well, what I was trying to get at in the piece, aside from reveal my slightly embarrassing obsession with both Rihanna and Beyonce, was that, you know, we're getting to a point where most people, if not everyone at this point, will have some sort of web presence or some sort of digital presence, and actually not having one almost seems abnormal or not the norm, and so that's kind of weird on its own, but we're sort of moving to an era where people have a Facebook profile or on Twitter or, you know, or on Instagram, and that's kind of the social norm, and we're sort of trying to figure out, we're very much in the adolescence of this era, but we're trying to really figure out sort of, you know, how much of ourselves we share online. And sort of, I sort of looked at Beyonce and Rihanna as two kind of polar opposites of how people who are very public and very visible and very much on people's radar, how they kind of use social media to talk about themselves and interact with their fans and their audiences. And Beyonce takes one particular approach where she reveals, you know, very intimate photos of her family and her husband and her personal life, but everything still feels very much like, you know, a staged photo shoot. I mean, you don't really ever see a lock of hair out of place or anything embarrassing. It's very carefully manicured and groomed, but still intimate, and you still get a sense of what her life is like beyond what we see in the tabloids. And so that's sort of one way people kind of can interact with the people that are following them or interested in their lives. You can sort of be very careful about the image that you present and how you portray yourself. The flip side, you have Rihanna, who's a pop star, and she is, you know, incredibly wild on the internet and sort of posts about whatever she wants, and you get this very kind of raw and unfettered access into, you know, how she spends her free time, what she does at night, who she goes out with when she's on vacation, and it's, you know, it's like watching, I don't even know, it's just, she's on fire, and she's completely insane, and it's great, and you get this very sort of unadulterated, kind of uncensored view into her life, but it's not always PC, and sometimes you see things, she'll post very inappropriate pictures or things that might portray her in an unflattering light, and so it's interesting to sort of think about, you know, which, of course, those are kinds of two extremes, and not everyone will have to choose whether they're a Beyonce or a Rihanna, but it does sort of present this interesting juxtaposition about how we'll present, which side of ourselves we'll present to the public
and
through
if
social
those,
media.
Yeah, and if those are the poles, we're all having to decide where along that spectrum do we want to be.
Absolutely.
In this outward-facing thing that we have in our lives, which is the web and social media. Well, really interesting stuff from Jenna Wortham, who writes a lot of great stuff as a technology writer for The Times, including their Bits blog. And I'm glad we finally had you on the show, and we'll keep talking.
Likewise. My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us because our Transportation Nation director, Andrea Bernstein, is coming up to tell you everything you always wanted to know about New York City's coming bike share program. Stay with us.